The story of The Clash is the story of a band that changed everything. Now, their fascinating journey is a Spotify original podcast called Stay Free, The Story of The Clash. Produced with BBC Studios, Stay Free digs into the archives to unearth rare interviews of the legendary punk band. From their days in dingy London clubs to selling out some of the world's biggest stadiums and the legacy they left behind. This is The Clash in their words, and like you've never heard them before. Listen to Stay Free, The Story of The Clash. It's free, and it's only on Spotify.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your You Got It, the right stuff of music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica.
I got mixed emotions. Did I finally find me a river that could lead me out to the ocean? Cause I've only ever known the kind of love that leaves you battered and broken. So forgive me for my mixed emotions. Yeah, yeah. I'm not that kind of person who can fall in and out of love with you. That's not what love's supposed to do. I'm not that kind of person who can fall in and out of love.
Backstreet's back. All right. If you guys are dedicated podcast fans, there is a very strong chance that you are also fluent with, comfortable in, and excited about the ecosystem of boy bands, a style of music that has been unfairly maligned time and time again, and always is in need of critical rescue. And I hope in my criticism, I've helped do some critical rescuing over the years, but there's always more work to be done. And I've been thinking a lot about boy bands recently because there is a weird long tail thing that has been happening with some of the sort of essential boy bands of the late 90s and early 2000s that have been kind of creeping back into the popular consciousness. Backstreet Boys, who you just heard, that is Don't Go Breaking My Heart, which was the first single from DNA, which is a new Backstreet record that I have not fully listened to. Sorry. I just, you know, let's just be honest right off the rip. I have not listened to the fullness of this record. I've listened to bits and pieces of it. That came out in January and was popping for a minor second.
Number one album on Billboard 200.
January number ones don't count. Just FYI.
Sorry.
No shots at everybody in the charts department, but that's just, we all know. Mid-January number one doesn't count. That's why Backstreet released their record then. So we're going to do a big boy band takeout on Popcast this week, both looking at the bands of that generation that are kind of maintaining a tiny firm finger hold onto the popular consciousness right now, and also some of the bigger picture ways in which boy band music has morphed. And so I needed enthusiasts, and boy, do I got them.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, do I got them. To my left, it's Maria Sherman. Maria is a senior writer in Jezebel, and apparently, can I say this?
Yeah, you can.
An hour after I asked her to be on this podcast, signed a contract to write a book about boy bands.
It's happening.
Which also doesn't exist, which is nuts.
It will exist soon enough. Summer 2020 is what I'm aiming for.
What?
And the publicist said I could do it. I started a couple months ago. It was like a long...
How many words do you write a day? Jeez.
Many.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you took a break from writing the definitive tome to come be here with us.
To take a break from thinking about boy bands to come talk about them. My boyfriend's sick of it, so this is pretty
we
solid.
We on podcasts are always happy to be proxy for better halves in relationships that can no longer sustain an intense volume of pop music conversation.
Yes. Yeah.
Certainly, you are not the first person who has expressed such a sentiment on podcasts. So you're a part of a proud tradition.
Amazing.
And I also, from reading listener emails, I know that there are a lot of listeners out there, podcastnytimes.com, there are a lot of listeners out there who feel like they cannot be heard properly in their lives and turn to us.
Yeah.
So we're here for you, Maria, and also for you, the listener. Andrew, we can talk about your better half if you'd like. Andrew Unterberger is here. Andrew is a senior editor at Billboard. And Andrew, I want to just really shout out this thing you did last year, which I was really happy to find, which is the 100 best boy band songs. You sort of edited and wrote a bunch of these blurbs. This is a hell of a package. It covers a lot of the right stuff. It covers Spanish language stuff. It covers K-pop. It covers the Beatles. It's got something for everybody.
Yeah, thank you. No, it was definitely a labor of love for me and a lot of the other people on staff. Yeah, it's a super rich history. It's a super diverse history, and it keeps popping to this day. So it was fun to do a list like that where, you know, you're talking about stuff from the 60s to up to the 90s, up to modern day, and the songs that still resonate with a lot of people. And yeah, no, got to rep some personal favorites, got to...
There's some
forgotten groups, some like second, third hits mm-hmm. or third tier hits by the absolute right. major acts.
I also saw the boy Ross Scarano mm-hmm. kind of got in here a little bit. Shouts to Ross Scarano in here with
good
the
people, yeah.
With the Jodeci.
Apparently also an old signing editor of Maria.
So. Yeah. So a thing that I have found over the years doing podcasts is sometimes there are blocks of knowledge that I think are really diffuse, mm-hmm. but it turns out that they're all actually very interwoven. So I didn't know you guys knew each other prior to yesterday,
yeah.
but like we're all in the same gang. So this Backstreet Boys record, I thought it was important to open with it because, frankly, Andrew, on this list, what is the number one song? Speak on it.
I want it that way.
You are?
My fire.
Damn, one desire. Damn right.
Happy 20th anniversary coming up for that song. I think the top of next month, actually.
Here's the real question. Who is going to do Latrell and who's going to do Richardson? Like,
The funny thing is that growing up, like I know that song backwards and forwards. If you ask me to tell you who does what part on that song, I don't think I could do it.
Really?
To me, the Backstreet Boys were always just the Backstreet Boys. I was never like, oh, I was a Brian guy. I was a Howie guy. I was. I don't know how many Howie guys there are. Period. Wait, but
I'm here to defend Howie.
Oh my
god, get into it.
That's what I'm saying. Like they were just the Backstreet Boys. It was not a collection of solo stars. It was just this one monolithic entity, and they were interchangeable as far as I was concerned, aside from how they looked in the videos.
Here's a great chapter idea. Howie, Kirkpatrick, like kind of like the forgotten guys.
Yeah.
Like just a separate breakout.
Yeah.
I don't know, like 30,000 word defense of those guys.
They would really enjoy that. Yes. I think a lot of people don't realize that Howie was not the original Backstreet Boy. That was AJ. But he was supposed to be the front person for the Backstreet Boys, but he just wasn't very charismatic.
What?
Originally,
one.
He was... Yeah, he auditioned to be in Menudo. He's half Puerto Rican, yep. which I also didn't know. If I knew that as a kid, that would have been revelatory because we are the same ethnic background. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he was a great performer, but he didn't speak enough Spanish, being first gen Floridian, so he didn't get the title.
Well, at least he's still in the group, isn't there? Like there's a Pete Best of NSYNC, right? Like,
yeah,
like Jason something.
Yeah, there are like a couple throughout.
Well, it's interesting that boy bands are sort of also like boy band creations, kind of like a social history of like late 80s and 90s Florida.
Sure.
Like you think of like
O-Town.
Like the demographics and like kind of who ends up making up these bands. It has a lot to do, as with many things. Shouts to Joe Coscarelli with Florida.
Yeah.
So okay, when we look back at I Want It That Way. That song threaded several needles.
Mm-hmm.
To my memory, and now I'm not super old, but I do remember there being a kind of emergent critical discourse at that moment that was like, hey, maybe the Backstreet Boys are good.
Mm.
Maybe they are not simply something for children. Maybe they are good, and maybe the songwriting is good, and maybe this is – and this was maybe the first time – now, admittedly, I was not around in the 80s. I mean, I was around, but I wasn't writing, you know, during the new edition into
New Kids
on the Block. Yeah. Like, I was not around for the critical writing at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
But my sense is there was this kind of almost emergent reluctance to say, we respect this. And then that helped set the stage for what NSYNC did, which mm-hmm. then helped set the stage for Justin and so on and so mm-hmm. forth. But to me, this was like the first kind of like, slight drill hole in the whole thing.
That's interesting. I mean, I was 12 when the song was out.
You calling me old?
I can't speak to the critical discourse surrounding it at the time. Ooh. I can speak to like the teenage boy reaction to it at mm-hmm. the time, which was not incredibly positive.
Yeah,
there
sure.
was that entire TRL moment where you saw like the rise of nu metal kind of as a response to mm-hmm. the overwhelming popularity of Backstreet Boys and NSYNC. And and that folk. But yeah, certainly in the 20 years since I Want It That Way came out, I think it's about as universally recognized a pop classic has been released in any of our lifetimes, probably.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's come to be that song from that period, probably that, and Britney Spears' Baby One More Time. If you wanted to point to one song to kind of define pop music at the turn of the millennium, those are the two that you turn to. And it's lived on as a certainly a karaoke classic on, mm-hmm. on a plateau of like only three or four songs in history. And yeah, it's one of those songs that everybody knows, but kind of still discovers new things about. Like everyone sort of has that moment where they realize that the lyrics of the song don't make that much sense.
Right.
And that's something that you can listen to the song and sing along to it for decades without really ever actually bracing, because it's such a part of so many of our DNAs at this point.
Let's listen to I Want It That Way, and let's all just close our eyes and absorb the power for 20 seconds of this song.
My fire, the one desire, believe when I say I want it that way. But we are two worlds apart, can't reach to your heart when
the writers of I Want It That Way are Max Martin and Andreas Carlson.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think in interesting, I can't remember where this quote comes from, but there was a recent interview with someone associated with Hit Me Baby One More Time that was basically like part of the reason that it doesn't quite make sense is because the people who wrote it sure. like weren't 100%
yeah.
fluent in English, or at least in idiomatic English. And I think there's a little bit of that at play on I Want It That Way.
Yeah, no doubt. And it sort of helps it work. Like there's a version of the song that's floating around on YouTube and some other places where with the original chorus of the song, which has a couple different lyrics. And one of them is like No More Lies instead of Tell Me Why, I think. And there's a couple other like minor adjustments like that make the song more logical, but also less enjoyable.
I'm like so not up on this alternate version.
Oh, there's an entire rabbit hole to go down here if you're so inclined.
Okay, right. Andrew, so we're going to try to find the version of that song that you're talking about, and then we're going to play it.
Okay.
And then let the people decide how they feel about the difference.
Well, I'll be curious
so,
to take, yeah.
So if we find it, here's that part.
I'm yours completely, I feel. So deeply, you're my first thought every day, and I want it that way. My life is for you, and I adore you, my love. You're more every day, and I want.
I think my introduction to that song might have been, and I'm just remembering this, like a CD single at Burger King.
Ooh,
do you remember
what?
that was some intense, we're going for the teen audience marketing. Yeah, yeah. I know Backstreet Boys did it. NSYNC might have done it. I'm a Backstreet Boys stan when it comes down
sure.
to the Beatles versus
real,
Stones debate.
Real purism.
We were a Wendy's family growing up, so God. I don't know about the Burger King.
You like Westlife?
Yeah, exactly.
My gosh.
But it's interesting to bring up the sort of the Swedish influence with all of this sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. I feel like that could be considered the epicenter of boy bands. Boy bands obviously do much better in Europe than they have historically in America. That's mm-hmm. kind of where they begin, especially with German mm-hmm. audiences. And I know we're going to get into the Jonas Brothers a little
oh,
bit later,
yeah.
but I always think of Joe Jonas's band DNCE and Cake by the Ocean. And wow. the reason that doesn't make any sense. And it's supposed to be some sort of like sex on the beach colloquialism, but it doesn't really make any sense.
As good a guess as any, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't...
And
yeah is that
not...
what that song's about?
Yeah.
I have no idea. No,
yeah.
I have to be honest, I don't think about DNCE very
that
much.
That is, I came prepared.
I try really hard not to think about
it's
DNCE.
It's still licensed in like the world. I experience it a lot watching like teen television and maybe commercials.
That song lived on radio forever too.
It really did. Yeah.
Yeah. For a long time when I didn't actually know who made that song, which is like just me admitting that I'm a little bit old, but also like, Could you pick out a member of DNCE if they happen to walk into the studio?
Right, one of them now? Had a mohawk.
Yeah, they're very interesting looking. I think I could.
Really? Because even, I don't know, they were interesting looking and they were diverse.
Yeah. Right.
So they're the all interesting player? Looking, but none of them are interesting looking in the same way as any of the other members.
Yeah. I don't know. I just think, like, where's DNCE now? Where are those? We're going to get emails. They're going to be like, listening to podcast.
I
mean, like,
I hope so. I hope so.
Oh, my God.
I know that their drummer was the Jonas Brothers drummer forever. Ooh, and might be that. Doing it now.
Wow. And he's back. And is he back with the...
I would imagine. What would they do with that guy?
With like he's reconstituted Joe Bros?
I would hope so.
I think last week on Bobcast, in an offhand reference, I referred to the new Jonas Brothers single, which is called Sucker, as a Maroon 3 song.
Oh.
Send a shiver down my body to hear you say such a...
I stand by it. Let's listen to Sucker and just imagine a shirtless Adam Levine doing this, and you'll know what I'm talking about.
I didn't come here to be bullied.
Trigger warning.
We go together. Better than birds of a feather, you and me. We change the weather, yeah. I'm feeling heat in December when you found me. I've been dancing on top of cars and stumbling out of bars. I follow you through the dark, can't get enough. You're the medicine and the pain, the tattoo inside my brain. And baby, you know it's obvious. I'm a sucker for you. Say the word and I'll go.
Okay, so if I'm being honest, the real reason I wanted to do this is when I first listened to Sucker, I couldn't figure out the why.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't figure out the need. I understand abstractly bands want, I get all the business stuff, but the Jonas Brothers, who I actually think had a pretty novel sound for a group that's in this category,
sure.
I didn't understand why this was the sound that they felt compelled to come back with 10 years after the fact. Do you guys have any sense of what's at play here?
Well, it's been 6 years, so it's shorter than...
Has it really been 6 years?
It's been six years.
It feels like 20.
It's been six. They've aged and now are like of an age where they could still be in a boy band, so it's not like they're middle-aged guys, and it doesn't feel as like strange or forcibly nostalgic as some of these other boy band reunions, at least to me, because it feels very like familiar still.
And familial.
Yeah.
Like, you know, except for Kevin.
Yeah. Well, Kevin tried to, like, kind of continue to be relevant, I guess, for a while. There was a VH1 show, Married to Jonas.
True. Shout to Danielle.
Yeah.
Also, where is Bonus Jonas? What's he up to?
I don't know.
Where's TBD, Frankie, heard from recently.
Does he have, like, a million followers? Is he like a TikTok star or something?
I would hope he's, like, an Instagram celebrity. Mm. I think family members do well on Instagram.
Is it time to look it up?
Yeah, why not?
All right. We're gonna do a quick... play the Jeopardy music. We're gonna do a quick.
I could see Bonus Jonas being friends with like some popular YouTubers.
Definitely.
Like Olivia Jade style.
Wow. R.I.P. R.I.P. to a real one. But
going back to Sucker for a second. Sorry.
Said nobody, but okay.
As out of curiosity, does the name Lewis Bell mean anything to you?
Yes.
Okay, so this guy is like very secretly like the new Max Martin, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He has four of the top six, early as of last week, he has four of the top six songs in the country.
I saw that.
And like a diverse array of them, too. It's this song. This is Jonas Brothers. Mm-hmm.
He's got a Post
Sucker.
Malone record.
He's got two Post Malone records. He's got Halsey's Without Me. Going back to last year, he did a Young Blood for 5 Seconds of Summer. And like a whole bunch of other songs. Havana by Camila Cabello.
Right.
Just hits that don't necessarily sound like they're coming from the same person. And most of them have like five or six other guys working on them, too.
Right.
But certainly, like, he seems to have his finger on the pulse in a way that not a lot of other people do right now.
Do you think that he wrote that song specifically for the Jonas Brothers? Or you think it was
he could have written
like,
it for Portugal the Man.
That's what I'm saying.
It was like
file number 14 right. on the thumb drive.
Yeah,
but it's a fit, and the timing was right. And like, look, it wasn't just this song either. Like, I was looking at the Spotify, like, the Daily 200 charts the day after the song came out. this was number one, which took me really by surprise in the first place. But there were six other Jonas Brothers songs on that chart that just like the revived interest in this group.
Older songs.
Yeah. Year 3000 and Paranoid and Burning Up. And, you know, this song went to number one on the Hot 100, Sucker did. They'd never even had a Hot 100 number one hit before.
Right.
I had a co-writer who was predicting that it was going to go number 100. I basically laughed him off. I was like, that's not going to happen. But he was right. I cannot believe the appetite that the public appears to have had for Jonas Brothers.
So someone tweeted this, and I can't remember who, and you have to, if you are the person who tweeted this and you're listening to this, please email me. I apologize for not remembering. But someone asked the question, which I think is a fair question, which is, this is not the first Jonas Brothers comeback.
Depends on how you want to define comeback. You know, when Maria marks them to 2013, they had like a handful of songs that were released on like a live album or a compilation or something.
Yeah.
Like,
well, the question is more like, why is the appetite, like, what's changed? Is there actually more appetite for them now? Is it that the metrics have changed and we sort of see, we have a more efficient way of kind of acknowledging how much online appetite there is for something like this?
Yeah, I think they finally went away for the right period of time. Like the last time it was only 2 or 3 years. It felt like the tail end.
Yeah,
and in the meantime, members have had solo success, so it doesn't feel quite as desperate. Like Nick Jonas is actually like a pretty successful solo artist.
Absolutely.
Talking about DNCE,
success,
I mean,
is it's a tough word.
But he's in the mix, certainly.
I mean, and the reason
that song's a jam.
That's a slap.
That is better than Moon
and he's
five.
The reason they broke up. So that I mean, it's all Nick's
before
fault.
Priyanka.
Yes.
Before Priyanka, don't put this on Priyanka.
No.
Just and just as a sidebar, I do not believe Frankie has a verified Instagram.
Wow.
He might have a Finsta. If you're up on Frankie Jonas's Finsta. Please let me know, podcast@whattimes.com. But yeah, so Maria, you were saying that kind of gap of time, it wets something.
Right. I think like the way that nostalgia plays out on the internet has changed and it's gone like so much shorter than even like when I was preparing for this, I was thinking of Simon Reynolds' book Retromania and the idea that it's sort of strange for pop fans to feel nostalgic for something when it's so much of like a young mechanism. But with the Jonas Brothers, I see them like pop up on like teen Twitter a lot. And I think a lot of it is sort of nostalgia for a certain time of Disney Channel movies. Mm-hmm. Like they were in Camp Rock. That was a pretty popular Disney Channel original movie. And
this is me.
Yes.
One of the best pop songs of the last 20 years. At me.
Yeah, it gave us Demi Lovato. So thank you for that. Jonas Brothers. Yeah. It's Disney. It's I'm not going to put Demi's career on the Jonas Brothers. But there was definitely like a hunger for them to come back. Like I've seen GIFs of them. And I think the way that they planned the reunion, the way they teased it out, was very specific for that, not necessarily Twitter, but that social media audience.
Can you talk me through that? Because I'm not up on how they teased it out.
Well, there's one example I think of specifically where they posted a video of them picking up a table and turning it around. I don't know if you've seen this. Mm-hmm. And then a very sassy Joe Jonas goes, "Oh, how the tables have turned." And it's from a video that they released like 6 years prior that was really popular and then was like sent around on Vine when Vine was a thing, and it was very much a like, this is a gift for you, the true Jonas Brothers stands. And I mean, they're still young and they're still cute, and you know, it's just kind of like picking that up and not doing the pop rock thing anymore, because obviously no one's doing that anymore.
And the song is good. Like
that was
the first discussion that I had about this with any of my coworkers was all of us going like, yeah, like it's a good song. Like we were all so excited that not only were they back, but they were back with a song that seemed like it was kind of a jam. That like I thought it would maybe have like a very slow, gradual radio takeover, and that eventually as more and more people realize like, hey, this is actually like a pretty good for a comeback single. I didn't think it was going to be their biggest hit ever, but like it's a good song. Like it's catchy. It's
I'm
got,
just saying, let my man
hand claps,
let my
falsetto.
Man Charlie Puth live. Like that's all I'm saying. Like, let Charlie Puth breathe, man. Don't be coming for his turf. Just let him breathe. So, Jonas Brothers, Backstreet Boys, and now we're going to talk a little bit about New Kids on the Block. And New Kids on the Block did something that is actually, I think, Maria, to your point, kind of like maybe how an older group does the thing that you said the Jonas Brothers did.
Mm, yes, yeah. It's also my book, kind of, so thanks for that.
So let's listen to, this is a new Kids on the Block song, which is part of the 30th anniversary. 30th? Good Lord. I remember buying the Hangin' Tough cassette. Wow, we're really going down that road.
Yeah.
There was a record store on Sheepshead Bay Road and Avenue X, and it was one of those white, it was like white and red and like kind of like looked like a music note, like one of those weird freestanding structures. Mm-hmm. I used to go when I was a kid and they would have the weekly charts on these little paper slips. And you would just like go every week and be like, oh, my God, the new paper slip is here. And then you'd buy the single. Yeah. Anyway, I bought Hangin' Tough on cassette at that store.
Respect.
R.I.P. to that store. That was 30 years ago, apparently.
Yeah.
That,
the song still goes, too. Oh, Hangin' Tough. God. That's a killer.
Hangin' Tough is a pure knock. It's a pure knock. Seriously, you're gonna could probably never. So there is a Hangin' Tough 30th anniversary reissue. There's a new song. It's called Boys in the Band. Boy band anthem. We're going to start with the beginning of this song, but then we're going to come back to another part of the song shortly. So this is New Kids on the Block.
You can hear them going crazy in stadiums in every nation. A never-ending celebration, baby. That's how we show our dedication. The boys in the band. The boys in the band. We do it for the fans, the boys in the band. Hey! Where the ladies let the crowd in, cause it's about to get loud in here. And we're only getting started, baby. Everybody wanna party with the boys in the band. The boys in the band.
So this song is like fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun.
The video
is so fun.
Maria, you said this is your book. Explain why it's your book. Because when I saw this video, right. I lolled.
And it's really funny. And my publicist said the same thing, but it'll be fine as long as they
damn,
talk to me.
Damn, publicist out here getting quoted. Shout out your publicist. What's your publicist's name?
Kara.
Shout out Kara.
The video takes place in like a high school, but Lance Bass is dressed like a professor.
Right. And he's got a little facial hair action.
He's got a little facial hair. He's wearing glasses, I think. Mm-hmm. Very stylish. And he's sort of introducing this schoolroom of kids to New Kids on the Block, who sort of act out an abridged boy band history sort of from the 70s onward. And the chorus kind of names drops all of them. But there is sort of a narrative about like boy bands sort of returning to form and every generation getting their own. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really clever. I think it was like a great move on their behalf. I think it'll kind of draw on attention from those other boy band groups to them. Yeah,
shout out to JLS getting in the mix there.
Yes, yeah.
That shows that the New Kids have done their homework. Well, certainly.
So, to this point, let's play the part where I think it's Donnie basically has like the rap section of the song.
Yeah.
Name checks 30 everyone, bands.
Yeah. BSB, all the,
BTS.
Yeah, BTS.
So let's listen to, in 2019, let's listen to Donnie Wahlberg rapping.
The boys in the band. Before we go, voice to men, to the end of, let's go back to the beginning, pay respect, new edition, then came BBD, BSB, B2K, 1D, 98 degrees, hum and talk to me, Jodeci, from B Brown, to Bean Town, to H Town, to O Town, came D Sound, Barry Gordy, found all the way back in Motown. Had to catch my breath. Peace, LFO, Menudo, JLS, BTS, Westside Jackson 5, NSYNC, take that. I want you. If it is enough, why does every generation have another one? Why do all directions only lead to one? Before you know it, they'll be.
There's a reason that The Clash were known as the only band that mattered. Their music transforms punk into protest. It fights for those who can't fight for themselves. And it inspires all of us to join them and do it loud as hell. Now, their spirit lives on in a Spotify original podcast called Stay Free, The Story of The Clash. Hosted by hip-hop icon and Clash superfan Chuck D, Stay Free charts the band's rise and fall and why their music matters just as much in 2019 as it did in 1979. Listen to Stay Free, The Story of The Clash. It's free, and it's only on Spotify.
So when New Kids are coming back, they face a slightly different landscape than Backstreet or NSYNC,
mm-hmm.
who are kind of recent enough to kind of be in the memory of young people. They kind of like proto-social media, early social media they were around for. New Kids, though, that's your grandfather's boy band practically at this point.
Yeah, but they also kind of serve, I think, as like the godfathers for the entire sort of mm-hmm. current movement. Like they weren't the first boy band by any stretch, but they were the first to prove that you could grow into adulthood successfully as a boy band.
Yeah.
And it certainly helped that like no one of their individual members went on to such like resounding solo musical success that there's like any reason for them not to come back into
all
the fold.
All the Danny Wood stands.
And shout out to Jordan Knight's Give It To You, which is still a classic of the turn of the millennium. But
Just as a set, like
generous.
This, no, that's a banger.
Co-written by Robin Thicke.
Yes. And I will say, seeing the kind of reluctance and maybe sadness in Jonathan Knight's eyes in this music video really hit me as a person who
there's always one member who's still just doing it for a living. But they had like a really resounding touring success in the aughts moving into this decade. They had like a comeback hit or two of a respectable size, and they're kind of willing to play the part in a way that a lot of their peers and followers wouldn't have been, where they're doing these self-referential songs, and then they're not like running away from it. They don't mind doing package tours. They'll go on cruises with the Backstreet Boys. Like they'll do all this stuff to kind of just stay at the forefront, stay a touring attraction, cater to their fan base, and they're living life. They're doing all right.
Important question before we move forward: have either of you eaten at a Wahlburgers?
No, but I lived close to one in Philadelphia, and my entire house smelled like onion rings for like 6 months. It was pretty.
But did you get the sense that they were good onion rings?
No. Did you?
I've never eaten at a Wahlburgers.
I've listened to a podcast about one of their TV shows, but I've never actually eaten at the restaurant.
I have to say, what we're really getting specific with the Outer Brooklyn references today, mm-hmm. I knew Coney Island was dead when they opened.
I didn't even know that Coney Island was dead, period.
Coney Island is dead when they opened a Wahlburgers right off Surf. It's a problem.
Very sorry to hear that.
I almost wept.
It was the true sign of gentrification.
This is real. Like,
your neighborhood gets Wahlburgers.
Dead ass. No lie. Anyway, if any of our listeners are going to go to Coney Island this summer, don't eat a Wahlburgers. Don't eat a Wahlburgers.
Look at the ground, walk on by.
Seriously, like, and if you need support, like, text me or DM me. Like, I'll talk you through it. I'll recommend four other places you could go. Anyway, maybe Wahlburgers is great. It's probably not, but I just had to know how deep you guys were in the game.
No,
not that deep, unfortunately.
If another boy band maybe opened a fast food joint,
I'd like to. All right, good. Which one?
I don't know, man. I don't know if I trust their taste. I feel like
Aventura. I want. Yes, now I'm excited.
You know what? Honestly, does Menudo own something in like Caguas? And like, can I go to? I mean, I'm in Puerto Rico every year. I don't know why I've never investigated this, but if they were to own something and it's just like some Mofongo, I'm into that.
But would Menudo? Would it be Menudo the brand that owned it, or the actual individuals?
It would be a brand, and there would be like a cutout of Ricky Martin. There's a cutout of Ricky Martin everywhere. Anyways, regardless,
that's true. Pedro is co-signing.
I feel like Liam Payne will own a restaurant at some point in his career.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's an insult, though.
It's not a compliment. Yeah. It's not totally an insult, either. I don't know. It could be a good restaurant.
Yeah, no. We do not stand
there. One Direction restaurant would be killer. Like a cup of tea. There's so many little references.
Killer in the sense that you would get stomach pain and you would actually have to go to the hospital?
Killer in that it would be awesome. It would do so well. I would move in.
So maybe we should go to talk a little bit about that direction, because obviously both of you guys have written extensively about boy bands. But Maria, you have a very particular subspecialty interest in boy bands, right, who are, to my taxonomy, boy bands that aren't. Sort of. One Direction, which is a boy band that to me is not.
Okay, that's an interesting
take. Yeah, I don't think I've heard this one before.
Yes, well, when I first reviewed One Direction, they were played at the Beacon Theater. This is their first New York show, or first like notable New York show. And the entire time I was in the show, I was basically like, they're not doing anything that boy bands do.
Because they don't dance?
They don't dance. They're not synchronized. They're not even particularly well harmonized. I'm not even convinced. Maybe three can sing. There were just a number of things that I was like, this feels off. But I was willing. I granted it a little bit of space because I was like, we're reinventing the form. The structure is the same, but everything that's happening inside the house is different.
Well, yeah. This goes back to the most interesting conversation one can really have about boy bands, which is, what is a boy band? Like, is there a defining set of characteristics that makes a group either a boy band or not? Like, how would you define that?
Well, this is why I think these groups that I know Maria is super pumped about, because then coming off of One Direction, you have 5 Seconds of Summer. And 5 Seconds of Summer, in their prime, were essentially a pop punk band.
Right, which I think is a form pulling from what the Jonas Brothers were doing in their heyday. Friday. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason that the Jonas Brothers were doing it is one, that's the music that they were creating at home. And because I remember seeing them in 2007 on accident at like Bamboozle Festival in New Jersey.
Wow.
And like Nick must have been like 12 or something. And they were like playing Palm Muted Power Chords. And like,
wait, Bamboozle was kind of lit.
I enjoyed it every time I went.
Bamboozle was like low key lit. Okay, just bring that back.
When did it end? Is it the 10-year?
We are collectively bringing back Bamboozle Festival. You know,
a good excuse to go to New Jersey in the summertime.
Truth, I was looking for that.
Yeah. Well, anyways, so I think the reason that also became so popular, and it wasn't simply because of the Disney backing, but obviously that's the majority of the reason of their success, is that when in that space between, like, Backstreet Boys and NSYNC, and then the Jonas Brothers, the popular music at the time for like cute or with cute boys was like emo and pop punk. So it made a lot of sense that they would start to perform that stuff. Are you agreeing with me? Or are you shaking your head?
No, I'm agreeing with you. I mean, like the interesting thing that I found about the Jonas Brothers, like kind of diving into the chart history of them, is that they never got played on the radio.
Yeah.
Because they were too punk for the pop stations and too pop for their alt stations.
Yeah.
So like, they kind of felt.
Well, did Radio Disney count?
No, honestly. No, I mean, it might have, but it wouldn't have counted.
Does it pop up on your data? Like, I don't know. Is Radio Disney, do they report?
Yeah, I think they do. I don't want to answer definitively about anything related to our charts department, but certainly not about that. But it wouldn't have mattered anyway. It would have just been like a station.
Silvio planted outside with
out Silvio by name.
Long range sniper rifle.
No
like
comment.
If you mentioned the charts.
But that's the thing, is that they did kind of fall into that certain like nether region. And I think that I've also like I interviewed one of the writers of One Direction's What Makes You Beautiful once, and he said that when dealing
is
with
it
boy
Savan Kocha?
And I'm glad you said it because I would not have known how to pronounce his last name. But he said something really interesting about how when you're writing for boy bands, you write counter programming. You don't do what's on the radio right now because you want to have these young kids, you want to let these young kids have their own thing.
Yeah.
So you don't try to go along with whatever is popping on radio at the moment. You try to kind of lead the conversation in a different direction. And that's probably why the Jonas Brothers did as well as they did, is because they weren't really what was on the radio at the time was, you know, T-Pain and Chris Brown and like a lot of auto-tune and a lot of you know, kind of early dance music, you know, early Black Eyed Peas or whatever.
Let's actually listen to that 1D record. This is What Makes You Beautiful.
You're insecure, don't know what for. You're turning heads when you walk through the door. Don't need makeup to cover up. Being the way that you are is enough. Everyone else in the room can see it. Everyone else but you. Baby, you light up my world like nobody else. The way that you flip your head gets me
So with that in mind, these groups, the sort of you're 1D into 5 seconds, does that all sort of tell that counter narrative? Is that what's happening in that kind of like family tree line?
Yeah, I definitely think so, because boy bands are like to the norm, the public, and uncool, and they are truly uncool and they're marginalized. And I think that kind of speaks to more how like young women's tastes are treated more than anything else. But because that is such a like a huge group of fandom that want their own thing and can find something to identify with, it makes a lot of sense to kind of go against what's like top 40 or whatever. But I will say that Savan Kocha guy that I really hope I'm not totally butchering his name. Well, What Makes You Beautiful is interesting because it was One Direction's first song post X Factor. So that was kind of the one that like really showed the world who they were, that they were going to be bigger than this television show in the UK. And also the guy who wrote that song wrote the Ariana Grande song.
Savan is one of Max Martin's guys.
Yes.
So it's more like just for framework. He's not operating totally outside of the
family tree in some capacity.
Yeah, like he's like he worked on when The Weeknd did the big pop crossover.
Yes.
He worked on those records.
Right.
Like so he is very much a person with his finger, the Louis Bell of his day.
Yes. Yeah, there you go.
What an honor.
we should have the Louis Bell of their day retrospective awards. We're going to start handing them out.
Yeah.
But anyway, just to locate where he is, he's not a totally left field outre figure.
Yeah, sure. I was just going to bring up that he wrote the Ariana Grande song that samples the NSYNC song.
Which I was,
that we were going to talk about. I'm sorry if I'm getting ahead of us.
It's okay.
break up with your girlfriend and bored.
Yes. Actually, let's just listen to that. Basically, on the most recent Ariana record, there's a song called Break Up With Your Girlfriend, I'm Bored, which samples It Makes Me Ill, which is a B-level in
deep
sync.
Cut. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a B-level in sync, sort of non-hit, but maybe hit to me. I mean,
it wasn't even a single. Like, it's...
But I feel like it kind of, like, it felt like a single.
Well, when you're on an album that sells 2.5 million copies in 1 week, every song's a single. But I mean, yeah, like when the song, you know, when the album was released that day, like we had heard in the Billboard office that there was going to be an NSYNC sample on one of the songs because the publishing information showed it or something that. So my first listen through it, I kept listening for it. I was expecting it to be something like the Halsey "Without Me" lift of "Cry Me a River," where it's like, okay, like a big song and a big moment from it. And it got to the last track, and like I had forgotten all about it, and then like. That little bit in Break Up With Your Girlfriend kind of like scratched like a very faint itch of mine that I barely even like could recognize. And I was like, wait a minute, is that from It Makes Me Ill? Like, and it's not even the chorus of It Makes Me Ill. It's like the pre-chorus. Mm-hmm. It's such a deep lift on her part, but it really makes the song and it kind of connects it to this lineage. Yeah. And she is absolutely a real one for that one. Right? Yeah. You could say, hey, then if you want to, but I only hate on it because I want you.
And that kind of speaks to a larger theme that we see coming up time and again across generations is the kind of primal way in which this music imprints on young listeners. Mm-hmm. And it's that almost like subcutaneous, like muscle fiber level accessing of feeling that allows them to go on Backstreet and New Kids Cruises or to tour. I mean, B2K is on tour. Yo, who's trying to see B2K this week?
I didn't know it was this week, but I'll go.
I think it's on Sunday. I like low-key want to go.
I feel like it'll be too many like middle school dance war flashbacks for me. Maybe high school. I don't know how old I am. But Bump 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 was like too sexy for my little emo self.
B2K was in my like in the very thick of my like pitchfork phase where like I was just like I was inhaling the cannon and like had no time for pop music whatsoever.
You missed out.
Yeah, I know. It's like a 2.5 year gap in my cultural knowledge that I'll never be able to get back. And B2K is like right.
That's Bumba Bumba slap written by R. Kelly, unfortunately.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Unfortunately, written by R. Kelly. However, still a slap. Right. But you know, a problematic one and a tough one. And if I'm not mistaken, Omarion said that they will no longer perform Bump Bump Bump. ... after this tour.
Say, that's a big loss for the B2K live set if they're going to write that one up.
I thought that was like a very having it both ways kind of statement. It's like we acknowledge the pain and the power. And especially look, B2K, a group that struggled with their rumors of sexual abuse with Chris Stokes. I remember when I worked at Vibe in the mid-2000s, we ran a story, shout out to Linda Hobbs, basically talking about sexual abuse in that universe, which kind of like sets the table for some later conversations. There's also obviously Lou Pearlman and everything that I should have Tyler. Tyler wrote the book on Lou Pearlman. Tyler, I'm sorry, we should have had you on podcast this week talking about Lou Pearlman. And there is a Lou Pearlman biopic coming or like a boss series of some kind.
I would have said it was a documentary, but
it's a YouTube premium documentary.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you got to pay.
Yes, I think so. There are two screenings that are, I saw this because the New York one is on Friday that I'm trying to go to with a Q&A with Lance Bass.
Damn.
So, you know.
Wait, but is it one of those things where he's also like the producer of it?
Yes, yeah. So we'll see what happens. It seems to be very like Ponzi scheme heavy and not some of the other stuff that should be addressed.
And this is kind of like a dark undercurrent with the boy band discussion these days. I mean, if you go back to that Billboard list, top three on there are Backstreet Boys, the Jackson 5, and the Beatles. And there's some
tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some tough discussions to have with a couple of those groups at this point. Like, And yeah, it's kind of inextricable from the history, but it's also, it makes it almost impossible to discuss because so many people, you talk about the Backstreet Boys and there were rape allegations against Nick Carter from one of the members of Dream from back in the early days. But it doesn't really get discussed the same way a lot of these other artists do because nobody really wants to think about that stuff with these boy band related memories, which are like some of the purest, happiest memories of their life.
That's so interesting. And so there's this, you think there's this kind of a additional impetus to shove that under the rug.
Yeah. Like even people who otherwise would be, the first people on the front lines kind of megaphoning about this stuff. But it hits at this really primal level that nobody really wants to get their memories mixed up in with this stuff. It's understandable, but it's really unfortunate.
Yeah, I understand that. But I also wonder how much of it is a lack of desire to interrogate it because it's still sort of this music that isn't like critically accepted. It's not
yeah,
like the space in which we talk about these boy bands is still so new. And I think of that a lot in like also like emo and pop punk world where this is like sexual misconduct is like so mundane as it is throughout, but it's not as discussed because it is this sort of marginalized separate music entity in certain ways, which is unfortunate.
A lot of the efforts in the world of criticism over the last 10 years have been to kind of like absorb all these things that had not previously been taken seriously.
Right.
I mean, I don't believe in poptimism as a thing, but I do believe there has been broad scale kind of like a, if you're a critic, you take everything seriously. You take boy band seriously. You take hardcore seriously. You take Southern rap seriously. Mm-hmm. You take metal seriously. You do that. But there are these things that have kind of still remained, for lack of a better frame, like almost subcultural.
Right.
And I do think a lot of those rock scenes, like basically Latter Day Warped Tour, post-hardcore, metalcore, like things like that,
right,
that I would venture to say most of our pop critic peers are kind of like, I don't have to deal with it. I'm not too worried about that.
Yeah.
And I think probably if there was like a Disney era renaissance type thing that was happening now or 2 or 3 years from now, I'd be curious to see if kind of mainstream music writing took it more seriously than it did 10 years ago. Because I remember when I covered the first Jonas Brothers show at Irving Plaza and like went to Jones Beach and like wrote about Demi and the Camp Rock Soundtrack, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember loads of other people doing that.
Right.
I remember it still kind of being like kind of on the fringe of polite criticism. And that was frustrating.
Yeah.
Because I was like, this knocks.
This is me.
Yes. True.
And you want to talk about books that haven't been written yet, like free idea for anybody listening out there, but like the entire like Disney pop moment.
Oh yeah.
Cuz it's not only the Jonas Brothers and Demi Lovato, but it's Selena Gomez and it's Miley Cyrus and it was such a fascinating moment that, as you said, was kind of outside of the critical spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
So there hasn't been a lot of critical writing about it and there hasn't been a lot of like anthologizing of that moment, but it's a moment that's so near and dear to a lot of pop fans' hearts that I can't imagine the stories that's there, the interpersonal drama that's there, and maybe some not so great stuff behind the scenes.
Oh, there's definitely
too.
Some not so great stuff.
So yeah, that's a book and a half. Where's, right
is
there.
That your book?
No, not yet. If any publishers are listening.
Yeah, holler at Andrew if you want that book.
Well, holler at Maria first when she's done with her book, and then you can holler at me afterwards, yeah.
Okay, a thing that comes up a few times on your list, and I also think kind of touches on this thing that we've just talked about, is K-pop.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously we're in an unusual moment in K-pop right now in that it's at its, I would say, its peak of American absorption and acceptance. And also,
So far.
Every
month is a new peak.
Sure. Yeah. But also there are these absurd and terrible traumas that are happening in K-pop in the scene in terms of sexual misconduct and former idols or even maybe current idols doing terrible things and maybe showing some of the seamy underbelly that we know has existed in the American boy band ecosystem. But because K-pop has long been at a remove, we either have not been aware of or was not publicized, especially because the way that Korean media covers K-pop feels loyalist sometimes.
I feel sanitized at the very least.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's notable that the things that we have identified as kind of traumatic undercurrents of American boy band music are not alone. We are not alone in that. There's some stuff happening with K-pop. That said, K-pop is basically the most vital boy band scene of the last 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I actually have something not to harken back too much to 5 Seconds of Summer, but this is going somewhere, I promise. I have like a couple of Twitter lists dedicated to people who run fan accounts for certain boy bands just to like see what's up and to make sure I know their location at all times. Just kidding, it's not that deep. But I noticed, like, in the 2015, when 5 Seconds of Summer were in between their last two albums, and they took a break, and by break, I mean 2 years, as opposed to just, like, kind of churning them out One Direction style with one album, one world tour a year, that people started to lose interest in them a little bit. And a lot of the 5 Seconds of Summer accounts became BTS accounts, like, overnight.
Wow.
And, yeah, and there was no real, like, articulation. There was no, like, hey, guys, I'm, like, into this thing now. And so it sort of, like, made me want to adapt to it a little bit. Like, I was always interested in K-pop, but I was, but it was very much like a, oh, wow, I guess 5 Seconds of Summer are adults now. They're no longer feeding into this boy band thing.
They also got bad.
Yep.
Oh, really? Am I going to have to be the only person to defend 5 Seconds of Summer on this
podcast?
Yes,
apparently so.
Well, like, for a while, it was, like, after the Rolling Stone cover story, I think, is the reason a lot of the girls stopped paying attention. And this was in, like, January 2015, maybe, where they, like, sort of presented as, like, a Motley Crue.
Yes.
where they were just, like, getting drunk and like, during the day in their mansion and talking about their Instagram girlfriends and things of that nature that was very not like, non-dangerous boyfriend.
Is that the profile where Chad Kroeger, like, shows them pictures of hot chicks on his phone?
It sure is.
Ooh. Wow, I blocked that.
That's worth a revisit, but yeah. Wow. Sorry,
he also only eats, what I remember from that paragraph is that Chad Kroeger only eats, like, chicken strips and Caesar salads. That's his diet.
Does that shock you?
Like, no, real talk, but I'm not going to that restaurant. It's just, like, it's a little concerning.
To be fair, that's every restaurant in Canada. Except the ones that Drake owns.
Oh, man.
They're all like that. Okay.
Oh, we can go back to... So, yeah.
But the wrong
Stone profile.
Oh, 5 Seconds of Summer, BTS. No, 5 Seconds. We didn't actually haven't even listened to any 5 Seconds of Summer.
Oh, okay.
Let's give me a emblematic early 5 Seconds of Summer song that would be so good that it would erase the memory of latter day 5 Seconds of Summer.
It's gotta be She Looks So Perfect.
Absolutely. Damn right.
Perfect freaking song.
She Looks So Perfect, 5 Seconds of Summer.
that is how it kicks off. Yeah.
Kids like punk music.
Yeah.
So obviously one of my joys with 5 Seconds of Summer was I used to go to Warped Tour every summer as part of my job. I also enjoyed it, but it was part of the job. Yeah, I did, but I did enjoy it, except for the heat. I wish it was like in April instead of July.
But kids wouldn't be off school then. So.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
That's why it exists there.
So 5 Seconds of Summer is basically a Warped Tour band formed in a test tube, kind of.
Yeah.
With no edge. I mean, with no edge, obviously. But, like, the reference points, I mean, we haven't even talked about Blink-182 and this other stuff.
Right.
There's, like, a lineage of kind of, like, left-field anti-boy bands.
Exactly.
And that is, you know, in my mind, it's a Maria Sherman special.
Yeah, yeah. And in my, and like, when 5 Seconds of Summer came out, I was very much like, this is sort of like all-time low, if all-time low is truly we're not even going to pretend with the Warped Tour stuff, we're going straight to, like, MTV.
But they tried to. There was, like, a moment when they tried.
Good Charlotte tried to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. I think those are two bands that have always been like, it's cool that women like us, that's what we're in this for. But not boy band, because those, they had some edge. I guess they had more tattoos at the time and different reference points.
And no Svengali, like no real Svengali.
Right. Oh yeah. And I think like...
Jeff Rickley. I don't know.
Yeah. And I think 5 Seconds of Summer were always like, they just look like a boy band, minus the fact that they play instruments. But I think the main reason that kind of like solidify their boy bandness is that they're under Modest Management, which is One Direction's management. Yes. One Direction has a financial, like, impet. I don't know. They, like, kind of own 5 Seconds of Summer.
And they toured together a couple times,
and,
right?
And they've toured together.
They like, 5 Seconds of Summer opened for One Direction at the Garden, I think. Am I making that up?
I know they did two stadiums, Meadowlands, or what is it called?
MetLife Stadium.
Yeah, in East Rutherford. So they're playing, like, One Direction stadium tours. That's and anybody who, like, opened for One Direction on the stadium tours are very much like, all right, you're going to be a thing, kid. So from the get-go, they were always going to be branded with this boy band thing, but they rejected it, and then when they rejected it, all those accounts apparently went to BTS land, and I do not blame them.
No, and also because Latter Day 5 Seconds Summer is bad. Sorry, Andrew.
I can't get with that, but
they wanted to sound like what was on the radio, and then they did that.
Terrible. They sound like the Chainsmokers.
No, Youngblood is a jam. I'll rep for Youngblood. Oh. About 5 Seconds of Summer, like... there's sort of like a prime example of how what defines a boy band isn't about their own makeup, but the makeup of their fans, I think.
Exactly.
Like, and if you go with any sort of musical or structural definition of a boy band, there's always going to be one or two boy bands that don't fit. There's always going to be a couple that don't dance. There's always going to be a couple that write their own songs, that play their own instruments, mm-hmm. but they're still boy bands because they generate this kind of like mass hysteria and like level of excitement in their fans. And that it makes more sense for a One Direction fan to be into 5 Seconds of Summer than a Misfits fan, like even though no matter who they're repping on their guitars. Like, it's still going to have more crossover in terms of listenership with One Direction and their ilk. And that's what makes boy bands so interesting, is that it's really not a static thing from the artist side. The only thing that remains consistent is the fans.
Maybe the helpful thing would just be to reorient how we think about the Misfits.
Danzig was the original Harry Styles.
Why are we not thinking of them as a boy? I'm just throwing it out there. Just something to think about. But yeah, so K-pop arrives, mm-hmm. and... one of the things that I was always very struck by when I first went to KCON a few years ago and early New York K-pop shows, which were not what they are now. They were maybe for 2,000 people, 1,500, 2,500. The fans that were there, very young, very female, very diverse.
Yeah.
Not very clearly hungering for something that was maybe structurally in the boy band space, but maybe was not being offered in the boy band space previously. And that was so heartening to see, because I felt like I was talking to kids, like I talked to kids at KCON, they'd be like, well, I don't go to concerts, but I go to this.
Right.
Sure.
This is a thing for me. So some of that kind of like outsiderness of like, hey, I like 5 Seconds of Summer, which is like a boy band, but not really. Mm-hmm. There was something in, I think, earliest K-pop adoption that was like, this has some structure of boy band, but also it feels like it's not exactly like what the mainstream kids are into.
Right. And that's like such an adolescent identity thing, I think, too, just to find something that can feel uniquely your own. And I think like boy band culture has that for a lot of people. You kind of come into it typically when you're younger and looking for something to identify with. And K-pop especially is so interesting because it does make sense that like a diverse audience would be the first to sort of embrace it, because one, it's not anglophonic, it's not in English, yep. mm-hmm. and I think that's something like more diverse audiences would be interested in. It's huge in Latin America for that reason, I mm-hmm. think. That makes a lot of mm-hmm. sense to me.
Let's listen to Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
Yeah.
This is early.
Spinning Wheel?
Yes, early BTS. No, not that. Early BTS. Sweeter than sweet, chocolate cheeks and chocolate wings. But no, you're not getting out of my head. No, you're good, sweet, I've been beat up here. Kiss me, I'm on the way. Hold on, I told you, told you, said I was in the walk. Baby, she had a drink, he didn't get it. No, 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 no. That's how K-pop in America started, mm-hmm. at this kind of like slightly to the left center thing. And now it does not feel that way.
Can I talk about new TRL for a second?
Just one.
All right.
Okay, that's enough.
So I'm really curious.
When I heard that they were bringing back TRL, I thought this makes sense because now it can be the home for K-pop.
Oh.
Wow.
Because
hire this man.
Yeah, why aren't you working there?
Oh, my God.
But for any of us who work on the internet, we know like what an insatiable appetite of there course. Is, not just for this music, but for expressing your appreciation for this music.
Right.
And for voting for this music.
Shouts to all the ARMY.
Yeah, exactly.
Who got me in mentions going back 3 years at this point, just keeping threads alive.
So, I you know, this spoke to me from my day because I grew up on TRL Mach 1, which mm-hmm. was the exact same thing for Backstreet Boys and NSYNC and Britney Spears and et cetera. And when I heard that TRL was going to come back without the videos and without any sort of voting component, it's about what a wasted opportunity.
But like, they did have those two kind of like bro-y twins who like
beat and there's a lot of DJ Khaled, so that was good too, I guess. But
I will say I've written a few pans in my career that have gotten a lot of attention and made noise. But my TRL pan, my new TRL pan, was one of my favorite pieces because I waited. I didn't do it on day one. I like watched it for a month.
Bided your time.
It was torture.
Yeah.
I watched every minute of it for weeks. And then I was like, it's time to drop the bomb.
Right.
And then they canceled it. Not immediately, and not because
they,
of me.
They read.
No, I don't think. I think from what I gather from people who responded to it, who worked at MTV, who I spoke with, it wasn't anything that people who worked at MTV didn't know.
Yeah.
But
right.
To your point, that would have been a phenomenal idea. And if you're going to bring TRL back in 2020, hire Andrew.
After I'm done writing my Disney pop book,
everybody's coming out of this with two new books and three jobs.
Yeah.
That's what podcast is for. We're here to launch you to the next thing.
I like that idea, but then why should it be TRL? It should be its own new thing.
That's
think
true.
Like, even the concept of TRL was very, like the new TRL was very strange to me because is anybody particularly nostalgic for that? Maybe the music of the time, but like the format? I mean, I'm wrong all the time, and it seems like Andrew doesn't agree.
No, but I also think, I mean, when you actually watch footage of old TRL, and you sort of see what a goober Carson Daly was.
Right. He's still like, on TV, though. Like, you can
still a goober.
Yeah.
But, like, was never cool. Like, there's not a point where you look at old TRL and you're like, man, like, Carson Daly was really swagging.
He's always been.
That never happened.
He's always been just good enough to not get fired at every stop he's ever had.
Like,
but
your man was out here rocking bowling shirts in, like, 02.
Yeah.
You know, like, just not a wave.
But I don't disagree with that. The only thing is that they do have like the music voting economy or whatever has sustained in Korea. Like there's a million of those shows where people vote for their favorites. Mm-hmm. Whatever. So but I guess it couldn't have worked as a nostalgic thing for the late 90s, but I think there was a way to kind of instill that concept in general in 2018 and have it make sense.
And also stan culture. I mean, look, stan culture in 2018 and 2019, it's not limited to boy band ecosystem.
Right.
I mean, it's like if you were going to do a show like that, you would want to sort of weaponize those loyal fans. And K-pop would have been a great pathway to do it. Let's talk a little bit about the K-pop system.
Okay.
Because the K-pop system, basically what Lou Pearlman put together with Spit and Glue, K-pop has done.
And lies.
And lies, right.
He's
and
a fraudster.
Lies and sexual misconduct.
Right.
K-pop has turned into basically like Microsoft or Apple. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like it's become systematized. So can we talk a little bit about why these groups are so popular and so plentiful?
I think it's simply that they go through a rigorous trainee program and they live together and they eat together, which is also what Lou Pearlman did with the Backstreet Boys, except for they were in a mansion in Orlando. And I don't know I don't know what it looks like in Seoul. But it's interesting because that like sort of factory mentality harkens back to like Berry Gordy and Motown. And that's what boy bands have been trying to do since seeing how successful those systems operate.
It's hard to tell exactly what the thing is that makes certain K-pop boy bands click more than others for me. Like the entire like math behind it is so different than it is in the U.S. Like I remember when I first started hearing about like the concept of K-pop boy bands, they would have like 8, 9, 10, sometimes 11, 12, sometimes
13.
Dozens of members. There's that one, it was AV48, where there's like an entire like house of people living and kind of like being bred for this. It's not just like a boy band, but like a boy band franchise almost. So it takes some adjustment to kind of adjust for American expectations. But the songs, I think, are just getting better and better. Like the last couple BTS albums, I think, have been really good. And
I kind of want to talk about Big Bang.
Yeah, Big Bang. Let's
I miss Big Bang.
Yeah,
come seriously. Back from war. They're not in war. They're like serving. They're serving though.
Although G-Dragon is serving. Also one of the people who's caught up in the whole current scandal is Sungri.
Yeah.
So you know, if it's coming back, they're coming back as four.
Do you think they're coming back? I don't know enough.
Well, I mean, maybe when they're 32 or something. Yeah. but he said he's retiring from entertainment, and you know, for.
I think that's just like K-pop mentality. When the scandal breaks, and if it's not like G-Dragon being like smoking marijuana or whatever, which just seems like a
was top. Was
oh, was it?
I think it was top.
Oh.
Well, I mean, G-Dragon, I mean, you know. He's a creative soul.
Yeah, you see where I made that assumption.
He can smoke what he wants.
But it doesn't seem like it was as big of a deal as these sort of, like, sex crimes and prostitution ring. And
yeah, though this reason stuff's real ugly.
The filming people without their consent, which I found there's a word for. It's called mulca. I've never thought that there would be, like, a crime like that, that there's, like, a terminology for, because it's such an issue in South Korea.
It's a Korean word.
Yes, yeah. Okay. But sort of going back to the factory system idea of, like, what makes these K-pop boy bands work, I think it's really interesting that there are certain roles and, like, stereotypes or whatever of those members, but it's not identical to the sort of Western system of, like, heartthrob, cute one, bad boy. It's, like, 4D, which is the eccentric one, and there is a defined leader, which I think is not really acceptable in Western boy bands. I mean, sometimes they just kind of happen, like a Justin Timberlake.
If there's a band set up too, like Michael Jackson or, you know, I guess Joe Jonas first and then Nick Jonas after that. But you're right that otherwise it is sort of supposed to be like a gang mentality.
Right. Like Backstreet Boys doesn't really have one. I guess you could say Brian, but I don't know.
No, but also it's striking how even with K-pop groups where there is an acknowledged group leader, all the secondary or other figures have very devoted fan groups.
Right.
Because I've definitely had experiences where I've written about, especially BTS, and you highlight something that basically like V did, and all of a sudden like all the V stand, like they all kind of like just come out and they're just like highlight, you know, they're screen grabbing and like highlighting that one parenthetical and being like, look, they're there.
And that's great. And
would the Howie fans do that? I don't know.
I mean, maybe it wasn't, it needs to be better defined. And I think because those K-pop musicians kind of, they embody those roles and they're very vocal about it. And they say, I am this. You don't have like Harry Styles. It's not like I'm the heartthrob and everything goes back to One Direction. With me.
Not in public. You know, behind, you know, like when he's screaming at Lewis.
Right.
You know, he's like, I'm the heartthrob. It's me. You don't think he does that?
No, because they're in love. Larry Silent.
Sorry. I don't ship. I don't ship.
Wow. All right. Well, I do, Larry. So I'm here for you.
Okay. So it seems silly and kind of like self-obvious if I say, is this going to continue? Because obviously it will continue. Mm-hmm. Do you think it'll mutate? And if in what way do you think it'll mutate?
Something that I've been really interested in recently, I think I sent you a link to a profile that one of my co-writers did about this group, King Calloway.
You did.
Who they're being billed as the Eagles meets One Direction.
I should say that I thought this song was bad.
Okay, that's fine. Like I can't.
I haven't listened to this.
I cannot like attest to how popping they're going to be. I think the couple songs I heard have been okay, but you know, obviously it's there's a long way to go there. But the thing that I found really interesting about that profile is that they. You know, they're asked about One Direction as like, oh, people, you know, you're going to get compared to One Direction, right? Because they're a prefabricated country group with, you know, members from all across the country. And so, like, okay, that's the mold. How do you feel about being compared to One Direction? They're like, great.
Right.
We love One Direction. Like, they're awesome. Why wouldn't we want to be compared to One Direction?
Right.
And the entire history of boy bands are boy bands claiming that they're not boy bands. We're not a boy band because we play our own instruments. We're not a boy band because we're too old. We're not a boy band because we're too good. But the new generation doesn't, there's no, that stigma's gone. I think in large part because of the writing of people like Maria, who have really kind of rallied the fan bases and say, like, this is okay. Like, it's okay to be as passionate about this as any other kind of music. And I think the people that have grown up with that being normalized, we're going to see boy bands that are like, yeah, like, goddamn right we're boy bands. Mm-hmm. Like even Brockhampton, who, you know, don't meet anybody's conventional definition of a boy band, certainly. But they're going out there and they're saying, like, yeah, we're the number one boy band in the country right now. And that's going to be a thing that I think we only see more of in the future.
And just to the point, I mean, obviously, Brockhampton calling themselves boy band, it's a provocation.
Sure.
It's you know,
it's subversive in a way.
Yes. And I fully embrace it. But I also, a thing that I've been thinking a lot about, and I think about this in the context of, like, all pop music, is just what we grew up, our generations, thinking of as pop music is just not what kids who are 15 or 18 now, that's not what their pop music is. So as much as I see what Brockhampton's doing by calling themselves a boy band as a provocation, it's also like, maybe if you're 18, I mean, certainly the most rabid fan reactions that I have seen at a concert probably in the last 5 years was at a Brockhampton show.
I'm in the camp where I think Brockhampton is a boy band because they're boys and they declared themselves one, and that's enough
for me. That's a lot of the battle.
I mean,
right there.
That's more than like I think of the One Direction movie This Is Us, where Zayn, one of his like three lines in the whole thing is just, when people say I'm a boy band, I say, yeah, but I'm in a cool boy band. There's still like there's some recognition. It's like a very nice middle gray of like where we were and where we are now.
Pray for Zayn, by the way. Just lost the plot.
He's going to be fine. he's great. But I think of, like, instead of Brockhampton, like, some other newer American boy bands that are kind of popping up, like, Pretty Much, Why Don't We, In Real Life. Those bands, I'm very curious to see what they do because I don't, maybe Pretty Much is the only one of that group where I've seen, like, a growing fascination with, simply because it seems like if you're a teen and you're into teen pop and you're into boy bands, you're into K-pop.
Mm-hmm.
And now that there are all these reunions happening, I'm wondering where the space for them really is. And a lot of them, like, I think all of them have a rapping component, right?
Yeah. Can we listen to Pretty Much?
Sure. Yeah.
Let's listen to Would You Mind, which is, I think, was the first or second Pretty Much single.
If I pulled you closer, would you mind? Would you mind? Would you mind? I have to work then the whole night. Nothing like your ex, no. This ain't what you used to. Just give me that chance, girl. Won't lose you.
And I know you've been hurt before, but I'll make it better for ya. I'll make it better for ya, for ya.
Ow!
And you've heard it all before, but I've got a question for ya. I've got a question.
So Pretty Much, I think, would have done great 10 to 15 years ago.
Yeah.
They're, like, very limber. They're a little diverse. Mm-hmm. They're a little edgy. There's a little bit of rapping. It's R&B and pop, but there's, like, some other influences. Like, when I first encountered Pretty Much, I was like, oh, it's back. It's happening. It's really happening. Yeah. And then it kind of fizzled. Why Don't We, I feel like, is not a...
They're trying, I think, a little bit harder than Pretty Much. Like they want to be on the radio very specifically. Like they have like Ed Sheeran co-writes, mm-hmm. and like
Macklemore's on the new
single. Yeah,
I kind of like that song.
It's okay. Yeah.
I just wish Macklemore wasn't on it. I was like, wow, this was so unnecessary. I really liked In Real Life simply because I think I was one of the 10 people who watched ABC's singing competition show Boy Band hosted by Rita Ora, and that's where they came from.
All about that.
Wow. That's where they came from. And I was this is great television that no one else is going to enjoy. That's where they came from. But
is that available on Hulu, perhaps?
I hope so. It must be, right? ABC? Yeah.
I would. Okay, well, I got to go catch up on that. I'm embarrassed I didn't watch that.
Yeah, some boy bands and like, I even from yesterday made an appearance.
I even watched the weird karaoke show that Joe Levy was a judge on. I've watched a lot of suspicious things.
This was 2017, so.
It's somehow, I might have had an off year. All right, I got to go catch up on it. As a Rita Ora completist, also.
Oh, of course, yeah. I got to see everything Rita does.
Shouts to Who Weekly.
Yeah, exactly.
Going back to Pretty Much for a second, though, I really love that song, Would You Mind, mm-hmm. when it first came out, but I was like, this is probably, this is hitting a lot of pleasure centers for me, but mm-hmm. for someone 15 years younger than me, they probably don't have those same reference points. I'm not sure that it really would really go in the same way.
Yeah, it's like a BBD song.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think you're right, and Maria's right to say that, this is not what the young boy band fans are looking for. What they're looking for is Brockhampton, is BTS. And I don't think that in, the conventional boy band setup yet, they've really cracked the code for the new generation. I think they will, because it's such a sustainable trope that people will keep trying until they have success with it. But I don't think they've gotten there yet.
I agree, but I'm also curious about Pretty Much simply because they are a Simon Cowell project, mm-hmm. and he hasn't been wrong yet.
Yep.
The Bengali that he is.
I can't tell if Pretty Much needs to be a little poppier or a lot weirder.
Mm-hmm.
I think, Andrew, what you said about Pretty Much is right. They nailed an idea of boy band skill that triggers people who grew up on the things that we grew up on.
For sure.
But I do think if you are young, it may read... I don't want to say false, but maybe almost too clean.
Yeah, like it's pandering to an impulse that isn't really there yet. Like maybe they're like, oh, this is like the stuff that my like older brother would listen to or uncle or whatever, Anna. But they don't have those attachments yet, those emotional kind of connections to that mold necessarily. Yeah. So to them, it doesn't necessarily hit in the same way, I don't think.
Before we finish up, I want each of us to pick a boy band song from the past. We'll play just a few seconds, like maybe like an underappreciated jam. Doesn't have to be obscure,
okay,
but just one that we haven't
touched. An obscure
touched.
Boy band song? Yeah. Yeah.
But one that we haven't touched on.
Oh, sorry, man.
I'm scanning through our list.
No, let's go. Pull up the list.
I want to pick something. My heart is always going to want to do One Direction, but I want to pick something that we haven't discussed yet.
I'll rep for a 90s Euro one, E17 Stay Another Day.
Whoa.
This is absolutely gorgeous, like elegiac sort of ballad. I think it was about like one of the members like had a sibling that died, and it's like haunting in a way. And it was like a huge European hit, like an absolute number one kind of canonical pop song of the 90s over there. Didn't really have the
Which
same effect.
Say,
over here.
Did not exist.
No,
in the
of
United
course
States.
Not. But and that's the fun thing about being into boy bands is that there's always undiscovered universes. Mm-hmm. There's like lineages where you know in the UK, Take That is the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC combined.
Yes.
Right.
And like when they broke up, like they had to set up like self-help phone numbers that people would dial in because they were worried about like teen suicides sweeping the streets. And like you might not know that in the US, you think they were a one-hit wonder because that's all they had over
right.
here.
Huh.
But if you're willing to dig and like look through what other cultures' interpretations of the boy bands are, there's always like entire new galaxies to find. And now we're seeing that with K-pop and Latin America, and it's fascinating.
So the song again?
Stay Another Day.
Baby, if you got to go away, don't think I could take the pain. Stay another day. Oh, don't leave me alone like this. Don't you say it's the final kiss. Won't you stay another day? Don't you know we've come too far now just to go and try to throw it all away. Thought I heard you say you love me, that your love was gonna be here to stay. I've only just begun to know you. All I can say, won't you stay just one more day?
Can I play a song I don't know the name of, but you're fine? Okay.
Definitively, yes.
We touched on like Lou Pearlman and Orlando and that era of boy band stuff, but we didn't talk about O-Town, who actually reunited in 2013. So they've like predecessors to this. Nothing is stuck. But
as with most things, O-Town, a little bit off.
Yes. Yeah. And they released a song that features the last bachelor, Colton Underwood.
Wow.
And I think that this is a good sign of like, maybe this isn't how boy bands should reunite. And no one else is going to listen to it if you don't put it on this podcast. So.
I'd literally not. And as a person who's into boy bands and into The Bachelor,
yeah,
I'm pretty surprised that this
happened like maybe last month, a few months ago.
Do you want me to tell you what the name is, or should we just play it and pretend it doesn't have a name?
Just play it. Just if I tell you all the pieces that make the song,
that's
you're
fine.
Curious.
That suffices. Okay,
yeah.
So we're not going to spoil it.
Okay.
We're not going to say what the name is. But
yeah, just
everybody who's listening now, you're going to have to live with the memory of this song.
I am a warrior, I am unbroken, another day older, and the battle is spoken, yeah, I've been fighting all my life and I won't give up, you get up when you fall, so here's my message to you, oh, hello world, I hope you got a little patience. Such a beautiful arrangement, but I'm not waiting for my turn.
sat on the sideline.
Can I also say a song by a group that we've previously disparaged on this podcast?
Please.
Yeah, BNCE's TV in the Morning
from last year.
No. Listen to this song. It sounds like 90s Duran Duran. It is super good. I cannot recommend it highly.
Andrew, you're overstepping. All right, let's go out on my favorite boy band. Well, not my, that's my favorite. It's Aventura. Let's go out with a song that really cemented my love for bachata. Let's listen to let's listen to Un Beso.
Se puede enamorar sin necesidad de hablarse, solo los labios rozarse, Cupido los flechará.
That is our show. Woo! I'm
so excited. I need to go like run a marathon.
Yeah, this is like really, this is your high NRG podcast of the week. Thank you to Maria and to Andrew. Early last year, we did like a big Ashley Simpson two-parter.
Oh, wow. Recovering. Where was my invite?
Recovering Ashley Simpson's reputation in history. I have a feeling that there might be something coming out of this podcast that maybe is going to be a part two similar to Ashley. If you have any thoughts on how we should continue to cover boy bands, email at podcastnytimes.com or bands that you think that we have not, either that we've maligned or overlooked. I want to hear about it. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast or subscribe to us anywhere you get your audio content. Our producer is Pedro Rosado from Head Separate Media. We will be back next week.
Se puede enamorar sin necesidad de hablarse, solo los labios rozarse, Cupido los flechará.
No love the heavy hearts, broken their back. Me back.